Welcome to Coach Considerations from the UK SCA. Views and opinions from the world of strength and conditioning.
Thank you, Andy, and thanks to UK SCA for inviting me to come and speak. It's a conference that's very, very much in my heart. I've been here, coming here for 10 years, and the fact that I get a chance to present is a real career highlight for me. So to you guys, thank you for taking time on a Sunday morning when you probably could be at home with your families and you're here listening to me. So hopefully you pick up something today. What we're going to talk about today is probably how do we develop, and it's long-term athletic development has probably been done to death right now, but actually I'm going to tap into, when Andy asked me to look at this and my cycle of my career, I'm going to draw on 20 years of developing LTAD systems across different sports, male and female, and hopefully give you nuts and bolts of how that works. And when I started building this presentation, it brought me back to some other presentations I'd done for different organisations, and I had a look at, brought me back actually to lockdown. During lockdown, it was a very unique time for all of us when we weren't on the pitch or in the gym training people, and a lot of practitioners reached out to each other, and I think that's where I connected with maybe a lot of you guys through Zoom and through Skype and stuff, and got me thinking about, I got lots of questions about how do you develop a program from a local football club or a local girls basketball club to how do you develop an LTAD program, because it's thrown out there as these are the models and these are the systems, but how do we actually develop that and what does that look like? So I'm going to give you my uncovered, unfiltered nuts and bolts of how I developed the program, but along the way I've had some fantastic mentors and I'll mention that as we go. But so when we're looking at LTAD, I suppose the first thing we need to look at is you start with the end in mind. So what does that look like? Back in Munster Rugby, when I was running the academy program there, my remit was to make sure these boys are ready to be beaten up in pre-season by the first team players. That was actually the remit. You've got 12 weeks to get these boys ready to train with the first team players and get beaten up as cannon fodder. Literally, that was the word that was used. So how do you get them ready for that? These are the full-time boys. But then within the system, I looked after the under-18s, 19s and 20s Munster players who were also Irish internationals. We had a pre-season of 12 weeks where then they played four games in the interprovincial programme and that was it. I never saw those players again for the rest of the season. So it was a different system. So all the models I would have studied, that went out the window. I've got 12 weeks to get them ready to play Ulster, Connacht, Leinster, hopefully win. Then they go off back to their schools. And a lot of the work was actually done in the schools. So my job, I took it on myself, was to actually get into the schools and help the schools because they're developing your players the whole rest of the season. So it's just kind of a, I'll get to this in a second, but you have to start with what is the goal. So if you're developing an LTAD program in your club or school, the first thing you need to go is what's the end goal for that person? Is it participation? Brilliant. Is it to represent our country? Is it to represent our school? Is it to represent our club? So what's the end goal for that athlete in that program? And then you work back from there. While not compromising, and in all of this, it'll all be about don't compromise your beliefs and your philosophy. With Arsenal, when I was at Arsenal, I was dropped in and Des Ryan hired me back in 2013. He said, Paddy, you're coming to here for 3 years. It's a three-year program. Minimum, your contract is 3 years. I want you to stay and develop this. You're never going to go to the men's first team. You're never going to the women's first team. Come, bring your expertise from the Munster, the rugby, hockey academies to there and build this program. And our remit from the club, when Arsene Wenger was in charge, was a self-sustaining club. His whole thing was self-sustaining. He's an economist by trade and coach. Our job was one player, one academy graduate into the men's first team every 2 years. That was our remit. So that was my end. So my 13, 14, 15, 16, 18-year-old has to be ready for Premier League football, one of them every 2 years. Now, we had a very, luckily in my time at Munster Rugby, maybe it was by design, and with Arsenal. When I was at Munster Rugby, I had the golden era of academy players. I had Peter O'Mahony, Conor Murray, anyone that knows these, Peter O'Mahony was probably one of the best back rows that's ever played a game. Just retired recently and gave me a mention in a newspaper article for making him lift silly weights at 16. So my program obviously had an impact on him. But so that's the end in mind. So what is when I was at Munster, my Munster goal was get these boys ready to be battered in training. But from the IRFU, Dr. Liam Hennessy was my mentor and my manager. his goal was the long-term development of that player, that 16-year-old Munster boy. How do we get him into a national team and sustain a long career as a national team player? And I used to look after the talent-identified players. It was a government-funded project. Because when Liam Hennessy was brought into IRFU, the top guys were saying, OK, we want to win the Six Nations. And Liam said, this is going to take 6 years, 8 years. And they laughed at him. And he was right. Because he thought about, we don't naturally, genetically in Ireland, haven't got big, strong, powerful boys like the Southern Hemispheres. So we need a program that's going to create longevity, and that's where our jobs came out. And that was my insight into LTAD very early on. So then, I like this quote. This is Warren Buffett. Someone is sitting in a shade today because someone planted a tree a long time ago. So anyone that's working in LTAD or working with youth development, or with a club a long time. I was with Arsenal 13 years, I was at Irish Rugby 8 years. It's, you don't see the fruits of your labour. So, yes, I got a mention in a newspaper, and that's not being boastful, sorry, last week. This is 15 years ago I was training this person. So you don't see your labour or your fruits of your labour for a long time. And that's why I think people fall out of youth development, fall out of LTAD, because it's you know, you're not standing on a podium with a trophy at the end of the week. Sometimes it takes years and years and years to see that person come through. And I'm going to show you in a second, every boy's journey is different, every girl's journey is different. So, little insight here, this is what I would call the seed. This is the seed of the tree. Just basic techniques. This is our under-13s. In the middle of maturation, just basic learning exercises, learning to do some lifts. This is the 18-year-old getting ready to play in the Premier League. Not perfect technique. I never put up videos of my best athletes. I always put up videos of my athletes. It's easy to put up the best athletes, the most powerful, the strongest, the quickest. This boy now, we sold him for £25 million 2 years ago to Newcastle United. Came through the academy from 8 to 18, then was released. So this is our program. This is the nuts and bolts. I had worked with this boy from 12 to 18. 6 years of just doing a few deadlifts, doing basic exercises. You can see the gym at the time. This is before our performance centre was built. Some of our best. When I talk about LTAD as well, people always ask about facilities, and I was blessed at Arsenal with amazing facilities. This is 6 years before our performance centre was built. This was a marquee in a car park, in the training ground, with three platforms, three racks, some weights, and some of the best players in the club came through that system in that facility. So it's not about facilities, it's about the people in the facility for me, and the players and intent and culture. And we'll talk about that in a second. So this is the remit. It was some graduates, one player every 2 years into the first team. And we had a lot of success with that. But how, and I spoke yesterday in a round table here, like we had two boys this year in Arsenal make their debut at 15 years, 5 months, 15 years, 7 months. So how are you getting a 15-year-old ready to play in the Premier League, the highest physical demands in world football as a league? So your program has to be pared back from that goal in mind. And it's getting younger and younger and younger. And do I agree with that? No. But that's the demands now on the academy staff, is to get them ready younger. And how does that... So your LTAD program needs to be robust from day one, right through. But that's the goal in mind. So when you're starting to build a program, you need to know what you're looking at. Where is that player going? Okay. And every boy's journey is different. Every girl's journey is different. I am sincerely proud of those players that I've worked with. I didn't create these players. Their parents created these players. I just helped them on their way physically, okay, and done their programs and maybe had an influence on them as people. By the way, from a long-term athletic development point of view, the psychosocial thing, and I get to this later on when we're talking about the female athlete, I don't think we realise how important that is, that actually you want to develop good people as well as good athletes. It's easy. My cohort was predominantly African Caribbean in London. That's what I'm getting in my door. Their genetics are incredible. Like, these boys are running 10.5 metres a second, jumping 55 centimetres. Like, that's not my programme. It's their genetics. My job is to make sure that they have the tools they need, and when they go into the first team men, first team women, they're ready to work. So that's the task I set myself, was how do I give these boys and girls the tools they need, so then when they're in the first team environment, even if they're at 16, 17, 18, they are ready to work. So if they say squat, you can squat. If you lunge, you know what a two-point start looks like. You know what a counter movement jump is. My job is to give them the literacy and the tools to be very good male professionals, female professionals as adults. That was my job. That's what the task I set myself. And this is my mission statement as a practitioner. This is no one else's, this is mine. Was to design, plan, and implement a world-leading evidence and experience-based long-term athletic development program for all my players. Premier League stat, and I'm using football as reference because it's probably one of the most cutthroat industries. You got 20 Premier League clubs, Category 1 academies, and then you got Category 2 down different levels. There's 250 boys in each academy from 8 to 21. So that's roughly 5,000 boys. 0.012 of them will play in the Premier League, which is 58 to 60. I'm not a statistician. The sports scientists out there can do the math for me. I think it's 55 to 57 and a half boys across 9 to 21 will play in the Premier League. So that's bad business, isn't it? So my job and my mission was to, okay, yes, I have a remit to get a boy into the first team Arsenal team, play for England, play for their country. My mission was to make sure that boy is ready for a career somewhere else or a transfer to a different sport, etc. So that's why I'm very proud of these players, but actually I'm more proud of this guy, Nathan Teller. Ruptured both ACLs left and right at 16. Sorry, at 16 done one ACL, at 18 done the other ACL. I rehabbed him through that. At 19, he was released by Arsenal. He'd been there since he was 7. Parents' tears in their eyes in the car park when this boy has been released. He went on to Southampton, 23s, under 21s, under 23s. Didn't really do well there. He got Young Player of the Year last year for Bayer Leverkusen. He was a late developer, had setbacks early on. He was a good kid with good physical literacy, with a good family who went, okay, if this is for you, we'll just keep working, we'll keep working, we'll keep working. I happened to meet his dad 2 weeks ago, and like, this boy now is smashing it in Germany, but he wasn't for us at the time. That same boy now, if he was in our system right now, would be probably top of the food chain. It's just timing, and did I give up on this boy when he had double ACLs at like 16, 17, 18, which could have been career ending? No, because he was a good boy, he worked hard, and now he's got a career. This boy, Danny Ballard, was released at under 14 by the club. Brought in front of the academy manager, you're leaving, you're done. We do contracts every 2 years, like 9 to 11, 11 to 13. He was released at under 14. He cried his eyes out in front of Liam Brady, the academy manager at the time. He said, please keep me, please keep me. He showed character, he showed heart. Liam Brady said, okay, I'll give you another 2 years because it didn't cost anything. We don't pay them until they're 17, 18. At under 16, we're getting ready for his apprenticeship, his full-time scholarship. He's full-time up to the main training ground where the men's team train, the academy's based, and they're getting paid. He was released at 16. They were bringing in two centre-halves. He's a centre-half. He was this kid, by the way, when you talk about adolescent awkwardness, was a baby giraffe from 12 to 19. Long, tall, gangly white kid. In our cohort of African Caribbean, powerful speed, agility kids, didn't fit in, but he had a character. He then was released at 16, see you later. 3 weeks into pre-season, our signings fell through. The academy managers called this boy, who's now back at his home club. So we need a centre-half, would you come and join us? Danny went, okay, I'm going to get a two-year contract. I'm going to join Arsenal for 2 years, I'm going to get well paid, I'm going to have best facilities, best food, I'm going to make the most of this. And this boy scored a goal for Sunderland in the Premier League 2 weeks ago. Now, if you look at his shape right there, right, this was a guy who was a late developer, late mature, but had character and heart. And I think we spoke about this yesterday with a round table here, Andy and us. Big thing for me is recruitment. How do you recruit character and heart? It's easy, measure the physical things. I can do a counter movement jump, 0 to 10, 0 to 30, MAS, and I go, okay, athletic profile is this. But what does intent look like? What does character look like? And I think that was a big learning for me in 20 years is that needs to be built into your program. Like as a performance coach, I see myself as more than the physical side of things. For me, the sets, reps, the exercises, that's my strength. That's easy for me. That's been boastful. But how do we develop the character? How do we give them intent? How do you develop them as human beings? Because as S&C coaches, as sports scientists, performance coaches, we spend a huge amount of time with these young players, male and female. They spend a lot. They spend most of their day with you, whether it's pre-training, prep, foam rolling, stretching, recovery, conditioning, off-field conditioning, rehab. So how do you develop the character? And then we want to move on to the origins of LTAD. So we're going to skip through this fairly quick because you're teaching you to suck eggs here. This is where it began. LTAD is not a new concept, but it's been packaged up. The old warriors of Greece, the Spartans, had a very, very robust LTAD program. Probably ethically wouldn't happen right now that, you know, if you're born a certain... Well, I certainly wouldn't have survived the Spartan regime. I'd have been thrown off the cliff at probably when I was born. But they, if you look back at the old literature and in the Roman literature and the Roman armies, like a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of innovation, a lot of research, a lot of what we use right now, even GPS, for instance, take GPS, is driven by conflict, unfortunately, and driven by military. And it was these boys and these girls had an LTAD program way, way back where it was progressive overload training for war. Anyone that likes their history, I love my bit of history. A corset came from the Roman armies. The Roman armies marching for days and days and days with loads of kit, with their whole life on their back to get to war and then have to park this and fight. We're getting back problems, they were getting injuries, so they developed a leather corset to put under their armour plate to help them support the load they're carrying. So it's just innovation through conflict, unfortunately. But yeah, these boys had a very strong LTAD program very early on. So when we look at the models, you know, it could take years to see the fruits of your labour, and every player's journey is different. But we also have to remember, as practitioners who spend so much time with these players, you never forget the impact you have on a young player. Like, you're spending so much time with them. A kind word or a harsh word could mean the difference between a bad week or a good week for those players. And again, when we talk about physical development and maturation, we kind of forget the psychosocial as well. That, like, a young boy, young girl is going through so much during an elite academy or during a school system. How do we nurture that? And, you know, you can have a boy who one day is your best friend or he's all about you, and the next day, through hormonal changes and a bit of maturation, his head is all over the place, and that's not their fault, and we have to be patient and understand where that's coming from. So it's very important to understand the models while building your model, and pay heed to the models. So you can look at these development of sports participation by Coty back in the day. This is, like, I'm just going to flick through these, but... they're all there for us to reference. Canadian Sport for Life model has kind of been the foundation of a lot of what I've delivered because of Irish rugby. Steve Abood, Liam Hennessy developed the Irish rugby long-term athletic development program based on this. And I really like this. It's from six to six nations. This is 10, 20 years old. And again, yesterday I spoke about this when we talk about long-term athletic development. I'm here talking about youth development and that process, but actually long-term athletic development is from the minute you're in a system until you retire. And I think as top practitioners, and this was yesterday, we spoke about this again, how do the academies and the first team programs fit together? If my remit is to get them there, well, the person that's there responsible for them needs to understand my job and what I'm trying to deliver so that it's a nice transition for the career of the athlete. As I said, my philosophy was to get the boys or girls ready to work for the first team, but that's not, the job isn't done then. They can still develop, they can still learn, they can still grow as athletes and as people. And I think some of us that work at the top end, and I've seen is when you go to the senior level of international or national or club, we're only focused on the game and we're only focused on winning because ultimately it costs us if we don't win. But actually, can you develop that person? Can you continue to develop that person? And that's very, very much key in this system. So the non-negotiables, if you're building a pathway, these are my non-negotiables. This is not literature. This is pseudoscience, Pawdy's coach performance pseudoscience. What are your non-negotiables as a practitioner developing an LTAD program? So we go back to the very start. We know what the goal is, what the end goal is, what that looks like. It's either first team getting beaten up or performing international for that team. What are your non-negotiables as a practitioner who's put in charge? You're going, I want you to deliver an LTAD system there and get it off the ground. What does that look like? What are your non-negotiables? So for me, it has to be a multidisciplinary approach to the development of that player. What I mean by that is, yes, my job is physical performance, sports science, nutrition, injury prevention, injury rehabilitation, strength, power, speed, yeah. But if I haven't got the coaches, the technical coaches on side in that process, forget about it. Forget about it. It doesn't happen. And I've had it. I've had it in lots of... The Arsenal system that Des Ryan has presented for years, that we've presented, that we're so proud of, took a lot of battles and a lot of fights to go, like, okay, I'm going to take the 11s and 12s to do a little bit of speed training with them. Not to make them faster, to give them the physical literacy of speed development so that when they're 16, 17, they know how to run properly. The battles we had with coaches to go, this is going to make them better footballers, and they're going, no, it's not. We want to do football for 3 hours. That's going to make them better footballers. So what are your non-negotiables? You have to have those around you involved. And this comes off the back of a conversation I had very recently with a friend in Ireland who's called me going, he's a teacher, but he was put in charge of his local hurling club, Irish Hurling, and the chairman of the club said, okay, you teach, you're a teacher, you're a strength and conditioning coach, I want you to put an LTAD program in here. And he was like, he asked me, how do I do this? I said, the first question you ask the chairman is, what does that mean to you? What does that look like? And it was just a tick box. For the chairman, it was like, oh, we need an LTAD program because that's what people do now. But I had no idea what that journey was and what that created. So get the coaching technical, get the governing bodies, the executive committee involved in your process very early on. That's so important. My job at Arsenal and our job, the sports science field in football, kind of was created out of lots of injuries in the men's first team. So how do we fix that? Well, we get the younger players ready quicker. And that was Arsene Wenger. That was people higher up to me going, okay, in this club, how do we get players ready to be robust to play 45 games a year? And that was the start of LTAD from the top, with the get the governing bodies involved, get the stakeholders involved. Evidence-based experience. I love the word evidence. Evidence-based practice. I've got a master's degree. I'm accredited through the UKSCA, NSCA, and the ASCA in Australia. I'm not chasing certs. I'm chasing information, knowledge, understanding. But my experience is what has built my systems. This is fundamentally the models we have here. This is what we're going to build and help. But actually, my experience has given me far more insight into... I've made a lot of mistakes. A lot of mistakes as a practitioner. Early on in Munster Rugby, I was weightlifting at the time at a very, very poor level. I was just talking to someone actually about my first weightlifting competition there. I was snatched 60 kilos, I think, and I was drug tested after. I was like, I said to the drug testers, have you just seen what I lifted? I'm definitely not on growth hormone. But and I was a strength power guy, and Munster Rugby used to train out of a gym that I worked in, and their S&C coach at senior level was like, oh, this little guy can lift. So can you teach the young boys how to lift? So I was hell-bent on every boy, whether he's the 6'10" second row or the 5'7" number nine, had to squat. He had to power clean. He had to deadlift. Why can't you push press like body weight? Why can't you double body weight back squat? They were the mistakes I made early on. And I remember players after going, oh, fucking looking at this going, this isn't good. That's not ass to grass. So they were the mistakes I made very early on, that everything should be, the system should fit the player. No, the player should fit, you should fit the system around the player. I made those mistakes early on. So that's my evidence-based experience. And I remember speaking to players after that, and they go, one of the players, I was all gung-ho. I was like the little guy in the gym, fucking screaming, going, 1RMs, let's go, let's get the chalk on and the music loud. And I remember some of the players afterwards going, Paulie, we hated you shouting at us. Whereas this player loved going, get in his face or get in her face and give her encouragement. So you tailor your experience has to govern how you coach, and your tone and your delivery is different for every athlete and every cohort. How I scream and shout at Bukayo Saka in a speed session is so different to how I would with Steph Catley, our Aussie international captain with the girls team. You just have to, evidence-based experience, if that makes sense. Sorry, going around circles. Be patient and consistent with your philosophy. Do not change your philosophy based on the change in staff. This is huge. In my time at Irish Rugby, I had three academy managers in 6 years with different philosophies. One was Irish, and he was like long-term development, physically, technically, tactically. Then an Australian guy came in and he was like, okay, these Irish guys are the Munster under 18s are too small. They need to be big. So let's just load them up with hypertrophy. And then the next one was a kind of a mix. So along the way, I compromised my philosophy going, okay, trust yourself, be patient. There's a long goal here. I mentioned Peter Manny earlier. At 17, 18, 19, he was 90 kilos. He was cleaning, power cleaning 140, but couldn't bench press 100 kilos because he had no musculature, chest, he had long arms. He'd done AC joint injuries as a kid. He dislocated his shoulder at 17, had to have surgery. The head coach from Munster at the time screaming at me, going, this guy will never play for me. He can't bench 150. I'm going, how do I get this guy to bench 150? I tried to get him to bench 150. It didn't happen. But he had the best engine. So what was most important was his posterior chain was phenomenal. That's what gave him a career. But I tried, along the way, I tried to compromise my beliefs, going, okay, trust yourself here. That this guy is athletically top. That is the bench important? Maybe it is for certain positions, certain times. So be consistent. At Arsenal, we had four academy managers in my 9 years there. Liam Brady was old school. Let the boys play football. Yeah, we need to do a bit of sports science, a bit of strength and conditioning, because he understood that was the way things were changing. The young boys had lots of injuries, growth-related injuries, just because of overload, lots of hours of training. He left. Dutch academy manager came in, and he was total football. I lost a year's development with my under-16s where they were not allowed to do S&C. They were not allowed to do S&C at all. It was just football. And it took, and I compromised myself, and I'll never forgive myself for that, because I lost a year's development with that group. And it was only when we done our Premier League testing, which is mandatory, anyone that works with Premier League teams here, they do benchmark testing 3 times a year. My under-16s, I actually, in that year, through football, we blunted development. So we done strength, power, speed testing, and those boys, after a year of not doing S&C but loads of football, were fitter in MAS, or the yo-yo intermittent recovery test. Of course they were, because they just ran. But counter movement jump and 0 to 10 and 0 to 30 actually stopped. So I actually blunted maturation. I blunted maturation because I didn't stick with my program. So as 15-year-olds, they were actually as quick as they were at 16. So even if we didn't do a program, they should have developed, and they didn't. So it's really interesting. Stick to your principles. Be strong in that. You don't have to be aggressive, but certainly trust yourself. Be patient. If it feels right and it's consistent, just stick with it. And that's easier said than done. And that takes a lot of battles and took a bit of courage and hard conversations. And I can't forgive myself for not sticking to my principles in lots of situations. Players must earn the right to progress. This is massive for me. We talk about, as practitioners, we all talk about how do we increase the program, whether it's sets, reps, load, or complexity. But how do we regress and progress? And in this, probably Andy will tell you my strongest trait as a human being, I think, is consistency and transparency. So I will treat the top international the same as I will treat the under nine. But in this, you're not moving on in my program unless you've earned the right. If you're not dedicated, and I don't care what the lift is or what, you're not moving on in your program unless you've actually applied yourself. You've given it a bit of respect and given it time. I'm not going to move you on, full stop. So and I think that for senior athletes is even more important. You must earn the right to move on. And the big one for me was the progressions, planned progressions and regressions. When an athlete goes through growth and maturation, you could have this really powerful player who's, he or she has been in your program for 4 or 5 years, 12, 13, 14, really progressive in their exercise literacy, really progressive in their physical competency. They go away for the summer, take a break, come back, and now they've grown 3 centimetres, 4 centimetres, and they don't move the same. So what do you do? Do you start from where you left off, or do you regress the program? And for me, it's key to regress the program. Anecdotally, Pawdy, Coach Roach, performance pseudoscience. During growth and maturation for the young boys, I was noticing that every centimetre they grow, they're putting on about a kilo, roughly. So if you've got a boy or a girl who's gone away in the off-season, had a break, and the break has allowed them to grow, they come back 4 or 5 centimetres taller, which is not uncommon. They're 4 or 5 kilos heavier. So what does that look like on a growing body? And how do you regress that? Now the coach is going, he can't move. She can't move. She can't change direction. She was this powerful athlete like a month ago. What have you done? Has she not done her off-season program? No, she's grown. So that's the education. That goes right back to the very first point. Get the MDT involved in your model. And the planning regressions, and I'm going to give a little example of my exercise index. This changes many, many times. But you have to give your players levels and give them what I would say a carrot to progress. And this is one of the things we've done, level 1 to 4. Like, these are for young footballers. This is based on young footballers, right? This has changed many, many times. And if I'm not doing my job correctly and the players aren't developing, then these benchmarks need to be increased all the time. They might look very simple to you guys, but actually, at any one point, I can say this 14-year-old is a level 3. This 21-year-old might be a level 1 based on their training age, their physical literacy, growth to maturation, and where they are in their development. Okay, I can send out these slides to you. It'll be put on the IQ, hopefully. This guided my work. So this sat on my desk in front of me when I'm writing a program for those players. So what am I trying to cover here? I'm trying to give them all the tools they need to become competent and hardworking adults. That was my task. Okay. Move on from that. I'm always asked, how do you bracket exercises for certain age groups? Well, for me, you put the exercises based on training age, not the age. And of course, I'm not taking an under 9, 8-year-old into the gym to do power cleans. I'm not asking them to power clean body weight, unless I'm trying to create a weightlifter when they're 18. But what do we need to give them so that they can come through the program and progress? And this is there's a bit of a typo there in the red, but these are just little ideas around what we do. And if you look in that, all the time, ABCs are in there, agility, balance, coordination. Those that work in schools or young players in clubs, that stays in their whole career. Even right now, with my Champions League women, I would do ABCs in warm-ups. It's constantly in there, just physical movement, physical literacy, basic fundamental movements. Again, these are just an example. And obviously, I'm big on Olympic lifting because I was an Olympic weightlifter very badly, for 60 kilo snatch on loads of drugs. this has always stayed in my... And people ask, why are you teaching young players Olympic lifting? They're going to be footballers. Like, because they can do it. They can move. So let's give them that tool. The same way as like we do loads of different sprinting techniques. It's just in there. And sometimes it's not suitable for the athlete, so it falls out. But that's just a kind of an example of... That's what governed my program. That sat in my desk in front of me when I'm writing a 6-week block, 8-week block for that group. And obviously, it's individual based. And that's why, if we go back to this one, I might have a player who's level 1 in one exercise, but he might be level 4, or she might be level 4 in another exercise. And that's what guided our discovery. And how do we get them cleanly, linearly, and obviously progress in life, and whatever you do is not linear, is it? It's got peaks and troughs. But at any one time, we could say, yeah, she is a level 2 here, but she's a level 4 here. And actually, some of the best players I've ever worked with are level 1 athletes. So we need to forget that as well. I'm not trying to create top athletes to make them better footballers. I'm trying to give them the tools they need to play the sport and strive and be robust in the sport they're chosen to participate in. So the considerations for males and females, the difference, and I think we all know this, but actually, again, these are things I print off and they're at my desk when I'm programming. You got the development models. You guys know this. I'm not going to go through this. I'm just going to flick very, very quickly. We know the difference between males and females from a growth to maturation point of view. Males develop later, peak height velocity. Women develop earlier. Boys have it good. When boys are growing up and they go through puberty and peak height velocity, what are they getting? The circulating hormones are all good testosterone. That creates cross-sectional area, changes in muscle strength, changes in force capabilities. Girls generally put on non-functional mass before they put on functional mass. And that's why your program needs to be different for male and female. And I learned that very early on, that when I moved into the women's team full-time, I discovered the word that was thrown around was like, well, the men do this. The men, well, not from me, but certain practitioners, the men do this, and we have to learn from the men. Yeah, you learn from the men because it's been an established research and a longer game. However, it's a very different physiology. and a very different psychosocial aspects, which I'll talk about in a second. We know these models, just everyone knows them, they've read them, but actually keep them in mind when you're developing your program. Have it simple, print it off and have it there. Look at it and go, okay, when I'm planning for this 13-year-old girl or this 14-year-old boy, it's very different. And pay heed to that. So if we're to look at growth to maturation, well, we need to adjust our plans to reflect early development in some instances, especially in females, because it's the critical window for the young female for skill development, coordination. So my 13-year-old girl who's going through peak height velocity needs a lot of coordination, mobility, stability. Unfortunately, with some of our young girls, and this is not just football, this is across loads of sports. I've chatted to netball, basketball. We're getting 12 and 13-year-old girls with ACLs because they put on this, as they go through peak height velocity, they put on this mass that has no functional properties and they can't control this. And now they've got more force having to be generated to land and jump and move. So make sure you're aware of your training program needs to reflect where they are in their development. Is it the right time to do strength with these girls? Yes. Single leg strength, single leg stability at 12, 13, 14. And it comes to psychosocial in a second. We'll talk about the access for young females and lack of access to these programs. But coaching strategies should reflect the emotional and the motivational differences. Like young boys, 12, 13, 14, are in gyms. How many 12, 13, 14-year-old girls will you see in David Lloyd if you go there tomorrow to do a swim or a spin session? Very few. It's a cultural thing. It's boys want to walk around that at 12, 13, 14. because the hormones are circulating, the testosterone's there. I want to get big. I want to get hench. I want to get dench. I want to all these things. And it's easier. It's easier to get a boy involved in a strength and conditioning program because the desire is there. For a girl, it's different. The body image is, well, I don't want to look like one of the boys. So even at top level with the top level girls, I've had that battle where we're trying to convince them that what we're doing is to make you a better athlete. You're not going to gain muscle. And that stigma is still there, even now. Okay, so be very aware of that. And then injury prevention should be gender specific, especially during growth spurts, because the injuries are different. At Arsenal with the boys, as we were going through peak height velocity, we were getting a lot of severs, Osgood Schlatters, we're getting pars defects, we're getting cracks across the spine from load. We weren't getting a lot of ACLs. In the girls, we were getting ACLs. We were getting ankle injuries, stability-based injuries. So your injury prevention program is different for the genders at different stages in growth and maturation. So just keep that in mind. And I'm not talking about a complex program. It's actually quite straightforward, is that this group now need to just do some stability work while we're adding strength as they grow. So the big thing is growth and maturation. We have to look at the long-term athletic stages. Adjustments are different. Psychosocial development, injury risk, injury incidence is different across the genders. We know this. We know this, but do we pay heed to it when we're programming? That's what I'm asking. So, and then the training focus. What's the training focus for a male and female? It's very different. So if you look at growth and maturation timings, again, this is a little chart. You can picture this. ChatGPT will spit this out for you. Put in LTAD differences between male and female into ChatGPT, will give you all this. This is not Paudy's pseudoscience. It's all there. Based on all the research that John Oliver and Roger Lloyd and Feigenbaum and all these people have done ahead of all of us, Dr. Sean Cumming, it's all pumped into this. Just be aware of the differences in their pathway. Girls mature earlier, boys mature later, on the whole. This is the big one for me, and I'm going to stick on this for a minute. The psychosocial development is huge for young players. And I mentioned this earlier, that you don't know the impact you have on a young player. You mightn't see that for years, that kind word or that harsh word or that actual arm around the shoulder. A lot of my cohort at Arsenal was so different to my cohort at Munster. Munster rugby, predominantly rugby in Ireland at the time, was private schools, middle-class white. I came to London. I'm dealing with African Caribbean cohort generally. Some are inner city London boys who have got no mum, maybe no dad, or they're living in a 7-bed house in Esher in Surrey. So the cohort was so different. And how I approach and train that person as a coach, it's not about sets, reps, load. It's so different. How do I engage that person in my program, and how do you treat them within your program? Some might need a harsh word, some might need encouragement. You need to know what's coming in your door. I might have a boy coming in who's taken him 2 hours to come across central London on a tube with no family to get the training. And he's now on the pitch or he's in a gym with a boy who's turned up in a Rolls Royce. And that's not an exaggeration. That is the difference. And actually, we were talking about lockdown yesterday. We had a little discussion about lockdown. What I saw in lockdown was the difference in the psychosocial and the sociology part of our cohort was frightening. Some boys were living on the 15th floor of a tower block, and other boys were able to do a program out in their garden because they had a gym. And the difference was, how do I get that same group ready to start under-18 Premier League football in 4 weeks' time when we come back? So you need to... And females are different, obviously. They experience stronger social pressures, and I actually didn't. Anyone watching the Women's World Cup right now is phenomenal, and anyone who's living under a rock won't know Ilona Maher, the American social media influencer. People are saying maybe she's doing it in the wrong way, and she's championing women. It's phenomenal. And my friend Kevin Geary, the head of performance at Bristol Bears, when she arrived to Bristol Bears to get ready for 15s rugby, the social media page for the women's Bristol Bears went from, I think, 20,000 to 4 million in like 2 weeks. They had to move the first game the girls were playing in the season to the men's stadium because they went from 3,000 tickets to 30,000 tickets in 2 weeks. The girls that were training there full-time suddenly have a whole media camera team following them around the gym. Suddenly now they're on TV, and how do you look? And people get more worried about how does she look in the kit and how does this, and it's all this stuff that I have seen with the women's football the same way. And those psychosocial pressures are so different, which influences your program as practitioners, because you're going, okay, I need you to lift heavy today. And they're going, well, I don't want to get big and bulky. They don't say it, but you know they're thinking it. So how you train the female and male athletes is a little bit different. For boys, it's that social media there is earlier. It's much earlier. They get exposure to that earlier. Bukayo Saka would have been taking a corner in front of 60,000 people from 17, 18, 19, whereas Katie McCabe, the Irish captain, would have played in front of 2,000 people 2 years ago, and now she's playing in front of 60,000 people suddenly, like that, boom. What does that look like? And that was my challenge as a performance coach, was how do we deal with that and nurture them and help them through those pressures while developing them physically. Males tend to be risk takers. They tend to be more competitive. That's on the whole, but actually females are very competitive. You put numbers in front of female players in the gym, like your outputs, your VBT training. The intent is incredible. They want to be better than their counterpart. But boys experience that a little bit earlier. Communication styles and motivation, as I said, are different. How do I communicate with the young 13-year-old female who's going through body image issues? She's, you know, getting stuff on social media from her friends, and I'm asking her to do a strength and conditioning program. Or the male 13-year-old who wants to do the strength and conditioning program because he wants to be hench and dench and everything in between. So it's all very different how you communicate with those, with the genders. And then the injury risk and considerations, we'll go through this very quick. Again, ACLs is not a women's problem. It is, but it's not. Men get them as well. Actually, Premier League men last year had a little bit of a spike in ACLs. Is it down to load? It's not lack of preparation. I think it's lack of recovery. It's generally ACLs, for me, it's a whole other conversation I could talk about, but it's nothing to do with Q angle or menstrual cycle. Or it's load in men or women. Injuries generally are load, or either lack of preparation or lack of recovery, one or the other. But you need to consider when you're developing your program, what's the end goal in mind? What are you trying to get to? Male and female, what's the epidemiology of that sport predominantly? And then work back from there. And that governs your program. Training focus by gender, go through these, it's on all the models, you can flick through this yourselves. I'm going to run out of time here quickly because I've been chatting. These are the key considerations for me. So like males, they mature later, their peak training windows are later, but the windows are only guides, by the way, so make sure you're not focusing on certain things in windows. Focus on all aspects of physical literacy throughout their career, okay? Boys are generally risk takers, girls are more caring and more trusting, I'm finding. So when I started with the Arsenal women 3 years ago, I'd known those girls for a long time in the facility because we shared a facility. Suddenly now I'm in charge of a program. Their outlook for me was different. It was a little bit like this. OK, okay, why is he here? What does he want? Why is he moving from the men? So as I built trust, it took me time to build trust, but once I built trust with the female athlete, they care so much about the program. They ask questions, and I love that. They ask questions. Boys generally are robots. Sorry, boys. Boys are generally robots. I had a boy for 8 years in the program, progressively. I remember him come up to me in the gym one day. He goes, Paulie, what's a push press? I'm going, I've done this for 8 years. You've had shoulder press, push press, split jerk. You've had this in your program for 8 years at some point. Not that they're robots and they don't care. They love to work. They just go in and do their work. Give me this. Tell me what to do. Whereas the girls are far more engaged and the buy-in is phenomenal. Paulie, I don't like this. Why are you making me do this? This just doesn't feel right. Okay, let's then change. So part of developing your athletic program is get your athlete involved. Sit with your athlete and go, I made the mistake early on. I told you about this. Every player does this. My backs do this. My forwards do this. Because you're big and fat, you need to do this. You're long and skinny, you need to do this. Get your athlete involved. Sit down with them. I used to do it with my boys all the time. Sit down with them, 5 minute conversation. This is what I think you need to work on. This is your profile. This is what I'm going to give you. What do you think? And it's not about pleasing players. It's about getting them involved in your process. And with the boys coming into the summer off-season program after a long season, we do our strength, power, speed. But I used to give them 10 minutes at the end of a session to do whatever they wanted. And it might be curls because they're going, we used to go lats for holidays, curls from Arbea, whatever you want to do. I'll actually coach it. I'll give you progressions to do it properly. They had 10 minutes at the end of the session. Once they've done the work, I've set them. Guess what? A lot of the time, they've done extra chin-ups. They've done extra bench press, which is great because that was in the program anyway. But yeah, get your athlete involved very early on in your program. And I'm going to leave you there, ranting for 45 minutes. Thank you for listening, and any questions?